I was curious when you reached out and said, what do you think about self-esteem or feeling better? And I was just like, I wonder what brought that up. But I mean, we could talk. We could talk about that. We could talk about feeling better.
Yeah, I just sort of think it's something, some of the things that I really like to get into are things that help the people who are teaching. And I think they're really important because, you know, it's this idea of people coming to you and saying, I'd like to be a better photographer. I'd like to take better pictures. And over the years, trying to figure through, they're asking to be a better photographer. And a lot of the courses and things out there that are offered to them teach them how to edit their pictures better or to get the right f-stop, etc. And I've just felt that so wrong, intuitively felt that so wrong over the years, and I've been trying to figure that through. And now I've figured it through now, and it's because you need to know yourself better. And self-awareness, self-awareness is it? So I suppose some of the topics that, if you were to break it down in headings, some of the things that I would be looking at tackling are self-esteem, perfectionism, self-awareness, the inner critic, all of those things. But self-awareness, I think, comes to the top of my, every time it comes to the, as to be the biggest thing in my life that's moved me forwards in my creative pursuits. So what do you think to that?
That sounds lovely. The byline or the thread in between awareness and confidence, and of course, you know, what I'm so interested in is how we make that space to explore what it means to be aware, and that comes from an ability to be compassionate and open. Mm-hmm. And willing to explore it, because it's quite uncomfortable, I've discovered. It's quite uncomfortable for people to sit there and think about, well, what am I doing? Or how is it that I can be more present and more mindful of my own actions, my own thoughts? So, yeah.
Yeah, and I hadn't thought of that, that actually you can't work on your self-awareness until you practice that self, that compassion. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's what you're
making
saying,
the space. Yeah. Being willing to make that space to even just explore or pull at that thread. Yeah, absolutely. There's something called mirror work in sort of therapy, but also in self-awareness work, where literally you're speaking and assessing yourself in front of a mirror. And I actually, you can see I'm making a face about it. That feels incredibly vulnerable and incredibly uncomfortable to me to think about that. In the same way that it's like, oh, when we started podcasting or when we started putting videos up of ourselves to actually see ourselves in front of us, that's a piece of it as well. Yeah.
So mirror work is literally sitting in front of a mirror and using that as a... Ah,
yeah.
Right. So like, when we do things like learning to go live and learning to do what we're doing now, we're sitting here, we're looking at ourselves speaking. Yeah. I think it's a really good exercise, isn't it?
It is. It is. That's actually what made me think of the mirror work. And there's a mirror behind me. And in design also, mirroring comes up energetically, how you arrange your furniture. It's a reflective. And so that sort of came up for me when we were talking about awareness and sort of a mindfulness and a presence. Yeah, knowing yourself. Can you be on a screen like this? I mean, how uncomfortable is it? I know now that we've been doing it for a little time, but how uncomfortable was it when we first turned on our videos and started this recording process, right? As podcasters. Yeah.
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 And it goes way back, doesn't it? And I think there was a great opportunity during the COVID time because we all started to go onto Zoom, didn't we? And we all started to see ourselves. Yeah. So that really opened up things, and we started, then lives kind of happened and videos taking over a little bit now. So we're all going, oh, we have to do this. But this goes back actually to my days as a portrait photographer and my assessment of people. I wasn't always assessing people, but it was just an observation, should I say, when I was photographing weddings. I would know from my bride and grooms, I would know which ones were self-accepting of themselves and happy and content with themselves by the end of a shoot with them. And you know it, because being photographed is actually quite a, if people struggle with that, everyone struggles with it, I think. Well, unless you're like a supermodel, who is?
Right. And, you know, you and I have put our supermodeling days on hold, but...
Yeah, just temporarily.
Exactly. Just a temporary thing, just right now. We'll be back at it. Do you know what stood out for you? What sort of cues or signs that helped you along with your assessments where you were like, oh, this person is grounded in themselves. This person accepts themselves. How did you know?
Yeah, it was just a freedom of being in front of the camera and just going, yeah, I'll just go and do that. Or most people actually are shy and awkward, and they email me and say, I don't like being photographed. That's generally the script that I get. Probably 80% of the couples will say that. I think that's normal, but that's what we're saying. It's normal to feel that. It's a not like yourself in a photograph or in a video, and to pick at yourself more than you would pick at anybody else, and to see yourself differently. So is that normal? There's just a few people that have gone through that kind of self-acceptance. They tend to be slightly older couples where they're more comfortable with themselves. They know what they want in life. So they know that their wedding, so it's a really good example, actually, their wedding, they're doing their wedding their way, and they feel comfortable in that environment. So they're not in this awkward place that they've put themselves to satisfy everyone else, like their parents and what's acceptable. So they're in that environment. Yeah, that's really important, isn't it?
It really is, when it's not about anybody else's feedback or acceptance, but it's whether or not you feel that you have pursued what you're interested in, what your vision is, especially for a project like photography. Oh gosh,
interesting, isn't it? How wedding photography—that's really interesting, because then my mind's going, well, we could link that onto life, because actually, how many people actually truly pursue what they want to do, irrespective of what society is deeming the good thing to do at the moment, or everybody else thinks is the right thing to be doing or wearing or driving or whatever. How many people actually are self-aware enough to say, actually, I don't want to. I want to drive about in a scrappy old van scrappy old van from them. I mean, I don't really care whether it's got all the mod cums or what it looks like or what anybody else thinks. This is me, and I want to be out in the... But things that maybe go against the trend of what society thinks is deeming you value or doing succeeding. That's the word, is it?
The success, yes. Yes, there's something about really turning inward and relying on inner compass versus external validation. When I was thinking about just the words or the phrase self-esteem, self-awareness, it can't possibly be self if you are actually reacting to or responding to something outside of yourself, right? Yeah. It becomes awareness when you recognize that you're having a reaction to something, and then being pulled back into that or dropping back into that understanding. But a lot of times, and this is often when we've talked, where I've just said, well, let's see what our body's doing. What messages our own systems communicating, not how they're reacting over there, but what's this happening in your field of knowledge? So
It's relating that to photography, it's so important, because people don't know who they are. They're imitating other people. They're wanting to be like X photographer who is doing really well, so they're going to shoot where he shoots and what he shoots and in his style, and not being themselves. And until you can truly, truly let go of that's you said it, the external validation. You let go of any external validation. So we're not going to care what anybody thinks of this. And you're also going to let go of that need to be like somebody else because they're successful. That's the only way that you can connect to what it is. I keep saying this, but what is you truly connect to in life? you, who you are as a person. And that is the only way to be photographing or creating in any way your own work. And that's when things get really good.
Yes. I have a client that I'm working with who is a visual design artist as well as a musician. And he let me know that he records on end his own compositions. He'll just hit record on his iPhone and then just let it go. And then he says he never listens back to it. And so while a part of me, I really understand that process where it's really actually about the creating and then hitting record, that in and of itself is, that takes a confidence and that takes a courage. But then it's next level, like you had said, when you actually get to go back and listen to what you produced. And he admittedly said it's because he doesn't know how to go back and listen without being critical.
I was thinking now, why would he do that? And I think it's a lack of esteem, I suppose, and worrying about what you sounded like and what you made, whether it was right, whether it was wrong. So you're worrying then, aren't you? It's like it's like going back and listening to a podcast and you don't want to because you think you've said something silly or you think you sound stupid. That's which we all do, don't we?
We really do. So same thing. Like I think especially when we were first starting out, I was just like, I don't want to listen to any of this. And then I was over editing it. I was going through and just taking out everything. And then I thought, well, that kind of takes away the energy, right, of the intimate and spontaneous conversation that occurred. But I was flashing back when you were speaking about photography, especially from the photographer's point of view. I've only had really one official photography shoot for myself and for my business. And that was now going on 2.5, almost 3 years ago. And I recall feeling extremely rigid and uncomfortable when I was sitting in my office and posing. And so finally, my photographer says, let's pull out your dance playlist. Let's pull out, you know, this environment that's going to make you feel and remember that it's just you. So I pulled out my playlist and I began sort of like dancing and moving, and those pictures got better in time. But what really happened was once I got into the environment, which is really my healing, my environment, which is being in the ocean, being in the sea. And so I found myself like literally frolicking. I don't use that word often, and I don't frolic often, but I was frolicking in the waves in a San Francisco beach. And those were the very best pictures in the end, because I didn't care. I was more interested in how my body felt in the water, the warmth of the sun, the wind. And so once I sort of just connected with my own experience of elements, that was like the golden moment of truly feeling free. I didn't even realize she was there anymore taking pictures.
Yeah. It was a beautiful shoot that. It just looks like you. Really nice.
Exactly. And so what you just said is really important. Like you could identify that looks like you, that looks like me. Yeah. And so when I saw those pictures, there was no criticism. There wasn't any shyness around it. It was like, oh, there I am. And so, I mean, if someone were to ask, how do you get into that mode? My first inclination is to say, go where you're comfortable, go where you feel freest, go where you feel the most joyful and connected. And I know for you and for me that for us, it's being outside in environments, it's outside in the elements.
And that really ties in actually with my past as a photographer. I just sort of naturally stopped taking bookings where they were asking me to come and shoot them. Well, a studio, that was years ago. I wouldn't go near a studio. I just wouldn't do that. That's just not me.
I can't even see you doing that. No, no way.
I used to do like sort of like studio, and I was like, oh, this is, and I'd get them, you know, kids. I used to be kids in the studio, but I'd get them playing, and that was, but then I thought, well, nature, why are they not out in a natural environment? So I stopped accepting bookings for that, and then I stopped accepting sort of normal, ordinary family portraits, and only if people would if people would come for a walk with me and let the children play, that would be fine. So I naturally sort of started cutting that out, and then I've started narrowing down to beach elopements. So yeah, it's actually really interesting. And just while I remember when you were talking about how turning that round, so we're the ones on camera, how do we start to self-accept? I think one of the key elements to this is practice. The more that you do it, and the more that you go, I was okay. Actually, you know, I look all right. Some of them I don't, you know, I mean, some of them are not so good, but I look okay. And that's who I am. And you do it, and you do it again and again and again. And the same with everything gets easier, doesn't it? Like lives. When I remember first having to do that live with Kathy Heller, and she said, you have to go live, and that's what you're going to do in this week. And I was like, oh, I turned the camera on myself. But the first time I did it was I turned the camera on myself, recorded to Facebook Live, and it chose the audience, only me. So you are recording live to yourself. Good. So no one else can see it.
Smart.
Yeah, it's like a desensitization, isn't it? Because then I played it back, and then I was like, actually, that wasn't too bad. Next time, do it again, again, again. And then actually go live. And then now it's just like, oh, I think I'll go live. And I don't always know what I'm talking about, going to talk about. And I'll always, and this is really important, I'll always listen to it back straight away after it's out there already. So regardless, but I will listen to it back, because I know that when I listen to it back, it always sounds better than I think it did in my head.
Oh, and that
gains confidence.
That something?
Yeah, so then we get confidence from the doing. So that's why we're talking about building self-esteem. Confidence from doing. Do it, feel better about it, get stronger, do it again, get even stronger, get even more confident.
It's the conditioning of the muscles of doing. There is something really powerful about that exercise. I did the same thing that you did, except I didn't have the wherewithal. You're so smart to only record to myself. But my first live at Kathy Heller's prompting was about 180 seconds. So it was like 3 minutes-ish. And the whole time I was just going, I don't know what to do. I feel so uncomfortable. It was just, it was really awkward. But what I realized, like you had said, was that what a relief. And there was like this rush of, but I did it anyway. I did it. And that was my first. And then now I go on live like all the time, at least once a week, if not several times a week. And it's just, that is a process in and of itself, the practice of it and the actual doing of it. And then you gain like, I just got through that 180 seconds of discomfort. And and I still have it. It's still in my stories, or it's still in my video somewhere on Instagram. And in fact, it actually became the subject line of my very first podcast episode of like moving through the other side of 180 seconds. So
I love it.
It is crazy though. It is really, really interesting. Like you had said, there's a surprise about going, oh, that wasn't as bad as I thought. Why do we make it like in our heads, we make it like this catastrophe, this disaster, right?
We do. And then, we do, don't we?
Right? We go to the very worst of it and think it's going to be just like just this absolute mess. And I don't know if you've experienced this, but do you find that more people respond actually when you're just your human, vulnerable, messy self?
Totally. I think, that's what I'm trying to do more and more as I'm practicing getting better. Like today, for example, when we started, what will we talk about today? We're just relying on the fact that what we come up with naturally is valuable, and not worrying about whether it's valuable or not. I probably said that a little bit wrong there, but we're relying on the fact that what comes out of us is going to be interesting. And if it's not, then people won't listen. So does it matter?
Yeah. And haven't we both discovered anytime you and I talk, which is like whenever you've asked me to do anything with you live or having conversations, I'm always like, yes, because we are willing to try this out and see, number one, which it takes its own sort of confidence to do that. But also, you said something really important, which is, you know, people will decide. People will decide what's interesting. But even if we don't care what they think, that sounds a little rash. But I mean, if we're not paying attention to what others are thinking about us, that external validation that we talked about, we still had this experience of connecting and speaking about something that's very interesting to us. And it shows, and you can hear it. And I think you and I both have been approached by people who have said, you know, that conversation that you two have had hit something. It really landed with me. And we were sitting here going, well, it was just something that we were curious about. So we thought we'd follow that thread together out loud and hit record on it. So,
yes. Yeah. But we're freer in our talk, in our thoughts, and the way things go, because we've let go of that external validation. So that then is coming back to the photography world, where people are asking, how do we create, or art, or music, whatever, how do we create better work, which is what everybody wants to do. If you let go of that external validation, you're giving yourself permission for the real stuff to come through, and you're not getting stilted. You're not stopping going, hang on, I'm just going to, so say you're making, I don't know how to make music, but say you're making music and you're going through it and you start going with it, and it's really lovely and it's coming out of you naturally. And then you start thinking, oh, but would Joe Blogs like this, or would Instagram, is this going to work on Instagram, or is this going to work on TikTok or whatever? You're going to stop, aren't you? And then you're going to start changing it so it'll suit somebody. But we're never going to please everybody, are we? We only need to please ourselves.
It's so true. But you just said something really crucial, which is that moment when you recognize that you are actually lifting yourself up or out of your alignment. It's instantly noticeable. Or let's say if it's audibly, like let's say I'm playing piano or singing, and the second that I look up, so I used to have this, I used to have this rule when I was a little girl, up until like when I was like 20, where if I were to play piano or sing for anybody, I would ask them to turn around and not look at me. And then I gave them instructions of, if I look over and you're looking at me, I'm going to stop. I mean, I was a bit of a cow with it. But it's because of that, what you had just said, I realized that the second that I know that someone is watching me, then I change. Then I become nervous. Then I don't become in the moment present with my own creativity, my own whatever I'm creating in that moment. I've moved through that, but it took me like 20 something years to finally say, oh, it's really not about whether or not you're looking at me. It's whether or not I am in it. And that's really fascinating that you said that. Like the second that you try to please somebody else, then you're actually not even being authentic. You're not being congruent anymore.
And your work will go downhill, not uphill.
Yes, the quality will suffer. Yeah.
But we're talking about it like it's easy. It's very difficult, isn't it? Oh, that's not easy. That's a massive long process over the years, isn't it? Yeah. It's just so difficult we're talking about this. How do people actually, you know, what are the ways of doing, I don't know, asking you that question. What are some of the ways of working through that? I suppose practice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. Do you have any concrete ideas? It's a difficult one, that, isn't it?
It is, but here's why. It's because, okay, bear with me here. We have buried ourselves in, again, expectations as influenced by others. We don't actually realize that we're already doing the things that could free us and that we're most naturally doing. So the reason why I feel like it's a hard answer is because how do I say to somebody like, just stop, just go back to what you're naturally doing as if no one's watching you. And so oftentimes, and you and I have experienced this a few times, I spoke a little bit about this at the festival, at your festival last fall, where I just said, can you remember a time when you were just, maybe it was when you were about 6 or 7 years old, when you did not have the wherewithal or the awareness that other people might be looking at you, and you were just free and uninhibited, what would you be doing? Yeah. And so it's about uncovering and remembering. I think that's some of it. It's just remembering that you've done it before and you actually already have the tools to be expressive or be creative or be even contemplative when you're just left on your own without any other prompts. So alone time.
That's
some
it.
Quiet contemplation. Yeah. Even if it's like setting a timer, and I know timers sound a little rigid, but getting in the practice of allowing yourself some quiet time without any outside stimulation. So if that means just 10 minutes in the morning, instead of turning on the radio or turning on, did I just say radio? Do people still listen to the radio? I guess they would.
I don't know.
I guess they might. If they're streaming it, maybe. Yeah. Well, maybe internet radio. Yeah. But instead of turning on the television or instead of immediately reaching for your phone and starting to scroll through and engaging, why don't you put a little bubble in of like 10 minutes of not any of those things, not reaching, just being.
Do you think it's that excavating, isn't it? So you're not actually trying to move forward. You're trying to move backwards. So I've got something written here. I've written, we've spent our lives unlearning our intuition. So that means that basically intuition was always there, wasn't it? When we were kids, we knew what we wanted to do. We knew what we wanted to paint.
Yes.
But the years have just brought with it, you know, tics and other people's opinions and social media and thinking, you know, all the things that have covered that up. So yes, we've spent a lot of time unbecoming ourselves. We need to get back to ourselves.
Yes. Have we talked about that special word, excavation? Lifting layers up and uncovering what was actually the foundation and laid so long ago. And like you said, we it was buried. It was buried by the word assignment. The word assignment came to me while you were speaking, meaning everyone else was assigning meaning to what you do. And so it's their assignments, their projections. And then because we're social creatures and because a lot of us would like to please, we look for ways to appease and say yes. So you find what I do, you've assigned what I do as pleasing or successful or beautiful, and so now I have that as my definition, or I have that association and assignment as an informing way of being, of showing up. If like Sky, if she's going to ring the bell because she knows that it'll bring you to her.
Yes.
She'll continue to ring the bell because she realizes the reward and the feedback, right? Yeah. That feels
That's
good.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It is conditioning. I've got a
quote here. I use this quote quite a lot because I love it. I think it's, I can't even remember where I got it from, unfortunately, but it's about self-awareness. And it says, by 35, the age of 35, 90% of us is borrowed. We're so far away from that three-year-old who knew what they wanted to create. We no longer even know what we want. We emerge in our late 30s, 40s, or 50s, when the children leave home, into individuation and the light flicks on. I just think that just described me in a sentence. So it was quite powerful for me when I read that. I'll try and look up the book that it came from. I think, I'll try and look it up and leave a link. But for me, that was exactly what happened. And then at 35, age 35, ironically, I started to this process of self-awareness consciously. So it was a conscious work on myself, reading podcasts were the two main sources, videos, YouTube, TED Talks, all of those things I was starting to learn about myself. Books was number one. So I think that if I was to give anybody any advice how to become a better photographer, start reading books that relate to you as a person that you connect to, not photography books, books that relate to, that somehow speak to you. So my books were like Quiet, about introversion. That was a massive one for me. I read a lot about silence. I read a lot about health and well-being, and just trying to think what I'm reading just now. I'm reading the Mind Body Prescription just now, it's called.
Oh
my goodness. Have you read that?
No, but you are maybe the second or third person who has said that they are. And so clearly I'd like to see what's going on. Yes. All right, what do you think? What are you?
Oh, it's just incredible. Incredible. It's everything that I've been reading a lot about over the years and considering, because it's to do with chronic pain. It's very similar to the Ayurvedic concept, the Indian Ayurvedic concept that trauma, don't want to get too deep into this, but actually, why not? Trauma or stress or a bad period in your life is held in the body. They believe it's held in the cells. Yeah, and you need to release it. They have a slight, in India, it's slightly different. They held in the gut as one, but then in the cells. So by doing a, what's the word? Purge. It's not purge. I can't remember the word. You know, when you... Detox, a thorough detox of the gut, and then massage as well to release those toxins. So that's the Indian way of looking at it. But I'll maybe do a little podcast on that book because it's so interesting. But this book is saying that any trauma is held in within you and can come out in any form of chronic illness, whichever has your weak spot is. And the pain is real. It's very, very real. These chronic conditions are very real. But we're looking at a massive problem of chronic pain. It's like an epidemic now. Mm-hmm. And I notice things. I notice patterns. And women in their 40s, 50s, 60s, a massive increase. Probably a lot of the listeners here are going, I've been diagnosed with fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue. Mm-hmm. Real, absolutely real. I'm one of them. So I'm not saying that it's not real. But I think if you can open your mind to the idea that some of it can be helped with releasing trauma, past trauma, then you can be going a long way to helping yourself. So I'm going through a process at the moment, a very painful process of EMDR. I was telling you this morning, and I'm just absolutely wiped out. But I'm just trialing it, because why not?
Well, I think you know this. We didn't speak so much about it, but I'm an EMDR therapist. I'm an EMDR practitioner.
I didn't know that.
Yes. I work specifically with several of my clients to release and change some past traumatic memories. And after every session, which could be anywhere from 60 to 90 minutes long, that's even... The process in and of itself, it's quite exhausting. But when you're actively excavating, and when you're actively doing this self-reflective work, you've said it. It literally takes out your energy. It depletes your physical energy, because you are changing. You're literally changing cells. You're literally changing waves and you're making new pathways, neural pathways. You're making new associations and assignments, like we talked about before. So you're absolutely right. This excavation work could mean some deep excavation, some deep, deep down lifting out and examining. So you had asked back to one of your questions about, do we have some concrete ideas of how we might start to do this work of building confidence and I hear Sky.
I think, she's having a pad about.
One thing to do is, like we'd spoken about, is just awareness of what you're already doing. So keeping a journal, just even not Dear Diary, it doesn't have to be Dear Diary and talk about like all of your feelings and all of the things that you witnessed today, but it might just be noticing and like bullet pointing. It doesn't have to be so complex. And again, people already have assignments and associations with journaling. So yeah. Like me mentioning journaling right now, maybe some of your audience might be like, oh God, no, no, I don't journal. So I have an alternative suggestion, and I started doing this with some of my younger clients, which is we assign and find colors to represent feelings or moods. And so I was going to show you, it's a little bit too far down, but I made a little key of colors. And what one of my clients is doing now, and she's a young adult, she's in her late teens, early 20s, and she just colors in on her calendar, on her visible calendar, what color mostly it was today. And if it was a couple colors, like, so she only made like three colors, blue for sad, orange for moderate is what she calls it, and green for good. And so she just would put a little color. Maybe you could do a sticker. You could do something visually. Maybe take a photo of something that represents three things, three different moods. Start with three, you know?
I love that. Yeah, I think that's one of the things I missed out. When I said I started that process of self-awareness, journaling was probably the biggest one next to books. But what I do is I write a lot of book extracts, and often the books that I really, really love because they're just so good. Mm-hmm. So like maybe that thing that I just read to you about self-awareness will have come from one of those. I'll have jotted it down from a book into a journal. And because the act of jotting it down makes you remember it or use it more, because you don't always go back to the books. I'll often underline in books. I know a lot of people will be shocked at that, but that's just what happens.
No, I do
see them. They're being used. Yeah, they're being used. Yes. They're good. They're really, really good books if they're underlined.
Yes, yes, yes. And you know, you said something that we could actually track back to some of this EMDR work. And for folks who don't know what that means, it's essentially bilateral stimulation. It's lighting up parts of the brain that associate with that part, the opposite part of the body. And so let's say if you're swinging your arms, or for EMDR, you might be, moving your eyes back and forth, side to side. It's activating. There's something about the physical act that, like you had said, really, really resonates and sinks into memory. You're more likely to use it when you are physically involved in it. So writing in a journal, writing and literally physically you moving your hand and actually being in the act of writing versus, say, just thinking about it or saying it out loud, it does. It's at a whole new level. It actually activates the part of the brain that is coinciding with that part of your body. So, so writing it down, if you're a visual person, like I had said, I encourage people who like keep calendars to actually just put their colors or the quote or one feeling word on the calendar so they can see and track. Oh gosh, look, every Tuesday afternoon I get a little grumpy. So it helps just identify that you already are doing something and bringing it into awareness. So so jotting it down. Yeah. Jotting it down and the physical act of it, I think, is a key piece of it. So we'll call it like, what is it? We'll call it like, I was going to say writing, but like
writing.
Like exciting writing, like something like active writing, something that like gets you actually physically into it. I like that. Do you go back and read or look at your journal entries?
Oh, all the time. They've formed the basis of a lot of my things that I talk about now. Like I've got masses on self-awareness, self-esteem, perfectionism. So they form the basis of everything, actually, like literally everything in my photography. So a lot of it was to do with quiet. Quiet is linked to the exhibition that I had in the Bosom Gallery. So all my writing behind the work that I produce comes from these journals, which comes from these books. So the circle is a full circle. It's not just because I like journaling. It's because I want to explore why I'm making images, what's behind them, what's the feelings behind them. That's when the work gets deeper Mm-hmm. You're talking another depth of work. It's not superficial photography anymore. It's powerful. It's about me. So this is where we come all the way back round to the beginning of people asking, well, how do I become a better photographer? Well, don't dismiss any of the things that we've talked about. It's easy to dismiss this as being a bit airy-fairy and say, I don't need to be thinking about myself. If you want to become a better photographer, you need to be thinking about yourself, basically. Mm-hmm. So if that sounds, that's my advice. That's what's, we've been talking about for this on this podcast, how to become a better artist, how to become a better writer, musician. Work on yourself. It's important, isn't it?
Working on yourself, and then someone might even say, but how do I do that? Where do I start? And so take a couple of the suggestions that you and I have talked about just today, taking a quiet moment. It doesn't have to be long. It doesn't have to be all day, but a moment is a great start.
Can I just say on that point, a moment's great. 2 weeks is even better.
Oh, heck yeah.
If you can. Now, you're saying we can't always do that. And you're saying that's real. A moment's real. 10 minutes is real. If you can take a 2-week retreat somewhere, I'm a massive advocate for travel for that reason. And it doesn't have to be faraway travel. It can be travel to, I don't know, your next village to stay in a tent. It can be really humble.
It's true.
But the most powerful times I've had creatively have been the times when I've been away. India, Italy, when I went with Sean Tuckler to Italy, the times that I've stayed in my van for a few days without signal, those mm-hmm. have been the real times when the real stuff's come through. So if you can consider that, do it.
Oh, see, now it's flowing. That's a beautiful suggestion. And to piggyback on that, I would even recommend go somewhere you haven't been before. Move to something unfamiliar so that you need to rely back on your initial intuition and instincts. Even if it's like you'd said, just move to the next town over or to just another place, another neighborhood where you haven't spent time before. Taking yourself out of your usual environment and taking yourself on a quiet walk. And I'm a huge advocate for what you just said, which is 10 minutes is great. 2 weeks is fantastic. If you can do a month, holy moly. And so Margaret and I have a whole bunch of suggestions of how you might be able to do that, by the way, friends, to get away for a couple of weeks or for a few days.
Well, you've got retreats, haven't you? Now you're running retreats. You want to just quickly tell us about where they are and what they're about?
Yes. And actually, it's perfect because what I learned in the running of these retreats. So I started in California, which is where I am in the US, and I would just spend a day in a very quiet, nourishing, natural environment, redwood trees or the ocean. But I've expanded because I understood that people really need to be out of their comfort zone. And so now I'm running retreats in Bali, Indonesia. And that has been really powerful in that people are coming to that part of the world. Most of them have never been before. And so talk about taking yourself out of the familiar and really just kind of surrendering to the elements and listening and relying again on what your natural instincts are and what your natural curiosities are. Like that also activates what we were talking about earlier about our childhood inhibitions, where we just didn't, like everything had become almost routine and what's the word? Like it wasn't extraordinary anymore. But if you move into another location, a new neighborhood, a new island, a new country, and you remove all of the stimulation of noise or people, it's pretty amazing that you'll start to hear yourself again. You'll start to remember what you loved or what drew you into this in the first place. So right now we're offering 5 and 6 day Bali retreats for that very
Wonderful.
Reason, just to bring people, into a new environment
Fantastic.
And see how you react to that and how you do with that.
Amazing.
It's not too
Amazing.
Bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. And I'm moving more into the retreat concept, moving back into it. So we'll just watch this space. Yeah. I think it's really valuable for people to be thinking along the lines that we've been thinking today, it's just gifting people a whole new a whole new mindset and a whole new way of looking at themselves and opening up of their creativity. It's so, so important. But yeah, that's just been wonderful chat, and thank you. We'll chat again soon, KJ.
Oh, I know we will, because it's just too much fun. We get into so much fun when you and I chat, and we just go with it. So brilliant. I appreciate it. Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.